Bug now broadcasting in English.
Hello there, and welcome to this weekend edition of Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey, and I thank you for tuning in. Starting off a very excellent program for today, if I do say so myself, Czech life and the growing phenomenon of co-working centers. After that, some facts about the bohemian town of Nepomuk and lots of fiction in Spotlight. And later on in our program, another trip through the Czech radio archives. I hope you'll stay tuned for all that. Now, in Czech life, the internet has revolutionized the way we work. And for many people, it has made it possible to work from anywhere with an internet connection. But while working at home may sound like a dream to those who have to go to an office every day, many freelancers find their apartments a less than ideal environment to really get their jobs done. Thanks to this, co-working centers, which provide a shared working environment to their members, have mushroomed in urban areas around the world. Currently, Prague has 4 such centers. For others, renting an office with a group of like-minded people is an ideal solution to the dilemma of working from home. In today's edition of Czech Life, Sara Barufka explores some of these non-traditional work environments in Prague.
I brought my father's office chair, which is very comfortable, and everyone is using it when I'm not around. So this is my desk. I have a big keyboard and wireless mouse here that I connect to my laptop when I come to work here. And there is a common Wi-Fi connection, and that's pretty much all I need to get my job done.
Petr Kokší, a freelance journalist who writes about media and technology, describes his setup at a beautiful office with a spacious terrace in Prague's Vinohrady neighborhood. He rents it with 2 other friends who also are freelancers. But wouldn't it be cheaper to just work from home?
I have tried working from home for 1 year when I left my regular job 2 years ago. And at first it was great, you know, you don't have to get up every morning and ride the public transportation to your office. But after a while, most people find that it's not very healthy psychologically to mix home and work environments and, you know, to work in your bed or in your kitchen, because then you actually have no place to take rest from your work, because it's lurking at you everywhere you look at home, and there is nowhere to hide from it.
Many professionals working freelance and from home share Petr's sentiment. And in the last decade, co-working centers have mushroomed in big cities across the world. Currently, Prague has 4 such spaces. But what exactly does the concept entail? I put the question to Jakub Mareš, one of the 4 founders of The Hub, a large co-working center in the city's Smíchov neighborhood.
Co-working, it means sharing common space, common working space between more people that actually don't work together, but they simply share the workspace. The advantage of such concept is sharing the costs for rental costs, electricity costs, and so on. But maybe bigger advantage is that the people get to know each other. They can cooperate with each other, and moreover, it's simply more pleasant to work among people than alone in the living room.
Members of The Hub, located in a former printing factory with gorgeous high ceilings and exposed brick walls, can choose from a number of different membership options that are priced between 300 and 3,900 Czech crowns a month, depending on how much time they will spend there. Jakub Mareš is convinced that co-working is a concept that will become even more successful in the future.
I think that co-working is one of things that increase the quality of life. And quality of life, in my view, is defined by the number of choices you have. And if I'm a freelancer or I start my own company, I have more choices. I can work from home 2 days, I can be at my client 1 day, and I can work from co-working space another 2 days. That means that my life is more variable. I have more things and environments to see during the week. and I'm more happy. So I think definitely co-working is one of things of future.
Jakub Mareš says members come from all kinds of different fields, and many of them are trying to start their own business. Michal Juhas, together with his friend Josef Nevorel, is working on a startup website project called BookFan, which he describes as a cross between Facebook and Amazon. I asked him what he feels the advantages of working from the hub.
We tried working at home, but it was very unsocial. We just woke up in the morning and then we started to work at home. And it was like you don't recognize the night and the day because there is no line, like when to stop working because it's 5 p.m., it's 6 p.m. and you are walking always. So this is really good because the hub closes at 6:30, I think, so you really have to go home and have a rest.
Members can bring their own food and drink and leave it here. They can leave stuff in the fridge. They can bring their own dishes. But there's also dishes in the space that are communal. Coffee and tea.
Will Bennis shows me the kitchen at his space Locus, another co-working center in Prague, tucked away on a quiet side street off busy Wenceslas Square. Here, members can work 24/7. They are given a key to the space once they sign up. With 36 members as opposed to the hub's more than 100, it has a decidedly more intimate feel. I asked Will Bennis to describe what makes Locus special.
One of the things that separates Locus from any co-working spaces I know of is there's a real emphasis on internationalism. So there's a lot of expats, there's a lot of Czechs here who are interested in international business. The language of the space is English. There's people from, I think, 23 countries out of 36 members. That's a lot.
Aside from the advantage of having a designated workspace rather than working from home, are there any other positives? Are co-working spaces a good place to network? Will Bennis again.
The point isn't for people to come and sell their products, or it's a place to come and work. That said, people form natural relationships, but with their work. There's an accountant who's Czech, who's a member of the space. He does accounting for a lot of members of the space. There's web designers, there's business consultants, there's English teachers. People take English lessons out of the space. There's somebody starting an English school. So a lot of the times the jobs really complement one another. If you're a graphic designer, another person's a web designer, or another person's a translator, they often get jobs where they can turn to one another for help.
At my recent visit to Locus, an afternoon coffee break was in full swing. Will Bennis says he organizes them once a week so members can have a chat, get to know each other, and take a breather from their work. I asked an editor, an English teacher, a PhD candidate, and a web developer what they like about coming here.
Well, working in a co-working space, it stops you from going mad, basically, because when you work at home, you can just get a little too focused on the work. But what's interesting is that you can, if you have a problem, you can just ask someone here, and they can either help you out or you can find someone who does.
Basically, for not getting crazy, studying by myself at home, so Lucas is helping me to have more friends and not studying by myself.
Separating life from work, and I have a couple of kids. And it's very hard to work when you have small kids at the house.
Petr Kokshi thinks that in recent years, the separation of life and work has become increasingly blurred. In his writing, Petr, who says he cannot imagine ever going back to working in a traditional open space office, focuses on the way that the development of new digital technologies changes our day-to-day lives.
The digital technology is what enables us to work distantly from other places than the traditional office. And I think it's really changing the society and the way people live nowadays, because more and more jobs can be done over the internet and does not require the workers to come to the office every day. And the technology and the change in social life are quite deeply interconnected.
Will Bennis also thinks that the way we work is undergoing a revolution. Co-working, he says, does not just help people save money and connect with each other, it also cuts down on pollution caused by daily commutes. He describes a vision that a friend of his once shared with him.
One day, people won't go to their offices anymore, at least people, knowledge workers, people who work from computers. He said they'll just go downstairs from their flat to the corner workplace where other people who live on that block will go and work, and they'll just basically plug into their office from there because it will have all the resources. You won't need to commute. You won't need to deal with all the issues that are involved with going to work.
While Prague is far from having a workspace on every corner, its four co-working centers are enjoying increasing popularity. And for some, there is no going back to a regular office existence. Peter Kocsi says that after trying to once, he simply cannot fathom ever leaving his current setup again.
I took a job offer that required me to come to an office four times a week. Most people would find that actually quite benevolent, but even that was too much for me. I was not able to concentrate in the open space. As spring came and the weather became better, I started missing the terrace so much that I decided to leave the job and do more freelancing and spend more time here again. And I'm quite happy about it right now.
Journalist Petr Kocsi was talking to Sara Borůvka about why he would never go back to a traditional open space office in that edition of Czech Life. You're listening to Radio Prague, and please stay tuned now for an edition of Spotlight. If there were a capital city of legendary in the Czech Republic, the town of Nepomuk would be a hot contestant for the honor. There are said to be graves that glow when someone's about to die, a landscape littered with the petrified cattle of a greedy pagan, and the ghost of an evil musketeer who walks the earth with the still ferocious specter of his dog. The official population of Nepomuk may be only 3,700, but that's only if you count the living. For all the legends, historical events, and other things of interest surrounding the southwest Bohemian town, the first question I had when I came to Nepomuk was how it got its, for me, rather odd name, a question to which Jana Benediktová of the Municipal Museum had an immediate, if rather prosaic, answer.
V místech dnešního města stály původně dvě osady, Pomuk a Přesanice.
There were originally two settlements near where the town stands today, Pomuk and Přesanice, both of which were historically tied to the nearby Cistercian monastery that was founded in 1144. In order to differentiate the settlement around the monastery from the village of Pomuk, people started to call it Nepomuk or Not Pomuk, and in 1413 these three settlements were chartered as the town of Nepomuk by Charles IV.
Král Václav IV. Povýšil Nepomuk na město.
Most of the people around the world who know of Nepomuk know it from the name of its most famous son, St. John of Nepomuk, and there is no small number of such people. From Australia to Latin America, there are schools, people, and towns named after the man, called by some the most famous Czech. So what is he so famous for? Well, should you find yourself drowning, you should know. He is the patron saint of water calamities, among other things. And the town of Nepomuk was where he began life as Jan Velflin, the son of a local bailiff. The parish priest, Father Vítězslav Holý, told me the story.
Svatý Jan Nepomucký se tady v Nepomuku narodil.
Saint John was born here in Nepomuk in 1340 or around that year, and he was schooled in the nearby monastery. He then left to go to Charles University, where he began studying law and held his first job as a local notary. He proved to be a very good student, and he was able to go to study in the Italian city of Padua. When he returned as a young doctor of law, he became the right-hand man, vicar general of Archbishop Jan of Jenštejn.
On tedy na to místo nastupuje.
In spite of his auspicious start, John's promotion found him in the middle of a vicious dispute between the archbishop and the emperor, Václav IV. It was a classic case of greedy king versus God-fearing clergyman, in which, as usual, there was no small role played by international affairs and local power struggles. Václav, it seems, was anxiously awaiting the death of a sickly old abbot so as to gain the riches of his particularly wealthy abbey, and he was foiled by none other than John, who promptly replaced the dead abbot with the archbishop's nominee.
So the king was furious. He went after the archbishop in Prague's lesser quarter, but since it's easier to arrest a vicar than an archbishop, that's what he did. John was tortured, and perhaps because he was of a weaker constitution, it killed him. The legends say that the king himself took part in the torture. He had the body thrown from Charles Bridge, hoping the episode would end as the water engulfed him. But the opposite happened. John's body stayed atop the water for maybe a week, with five stars or an aura of light around him.
And such was the end of John Velflin, but merely the beginning of St. John of Nepomuk, whose image adorns many a bridge around the world, including the one he was thrown from. His was the first statue on Charles Bridge, and its bronze plaques are rubbed clean thanks to a tradition that touching them brings good luck. Were it not for St. John, though, the town of Nepomuk would still be well known for the seemingly endless source of legend and historical interest that is the chateau on Zelená Hora. The name of Zelená Hora, or Green Mountain, predates St. John by hundreds of years, beginning with a legend that even he surely knew regarding another Czech saint. In the church of St. Vojtěch at the top of the mountain, I met the local chronicler Božena Rotová.
Pro neschody z církví tady u nás odešel opakovaně do kláštera Benediktínů do Říma.
Saint Vojtěch left this country due to disagreements with the church here, and he lived with the Benedictine monks in Rome. He returned in 992 with a group of Benedictines and passed this hill, which was then a bare rock. According to the legend, a nobleman turned hermit called Břímota lived here on the bare rock, and Saint Vojtěch stayed here with him for a while. It was a time of terrible drought, and standing at that hollowed-out stone there to the right of the altar, Saint Vojtěch blessed the land. He asked heaven for rain, and rain came so heavily that the whole mountain and region turned green, which is why it is called Green Mountain.
Celý okolí je skála, proto se to jmenuje Zelená hora.
Another explanation would be that the hill is covered in evergreens and hence the name, but believe what you like. On the site there was a watchtower, around the tower was built a fort, and from the fort was built a castle, and so on until the present day and the 100-room chateau that's seen from far away on top of its very green pedestal. Volumes have been written about Green Mountain. It stood against the fearsome Hussites and the terrible one-eyed military genius Žižka, who burnt the cloister to the ground. A group of Catholic lords met here to overthrow the great Czech king George of Poděbrady. Emperors were housed here, St. Václav's crown was hidden here, and the Red Bridge in Nepomuk saw so much blood and battle that it's said the cries and shrieks of the soldiers still hang in the air in the evenings. Naturally, just about everything in the area of Nepomuk relates to Green Mountain in some way or another. Take the popular local surname Netušil, which loosely translates as had no idea. Before you take pity on Mr. or Mrs. Had No Idea, listen to the tale of how they got the name and the legend of the first upwards water duct in Europe.
Přišel mlinář Jakub od někud.
Once a miller named Jakub came here from some faraway place and wanted to put the old cloister mill back in order. He was a very talented miller, but for all his good qualities, he had one great vice, and that was that he was an incorrigible poacher. Time and time again, he was punished for shooting the master's animals, but in the end, there was nothing left but to hang him. So Jakub asked to show that he was worth more alive than dead, and he made a promise that within 1 year he would bring the water from the mill to the castle, which until then had to be hauled up the hill. He managed to do it using wooden pipes that, through some clever process, brought the water to the castle cistern. And the lord of the castle said he had no idea that he had such clever people amongst his subjects.
Mezi svými podanými má tak šikovní lidi.
Of all the historical events in which Green Mountain features, arguably the most important was the finding of the Green Mountain manuscript in the early 19th century, which also began the most intense debate in the history of Czech literature. The manuscript appeared at the start of the National Revival, when Czech nationalists were struggling to save their identity from the Germanization policies of the Austrian monarchy. Jiří Urban of the Czech Society of Manuscripts has been studying the Green Mountain manuscript all his life.
Zelenohorský rukopis pojednává o jakémsi sporu dvou bratří.
The manuscript essentially deals with a dispute between two brothers, but it illustrates a democratic system that it says existed in our nation at the time. The princess Libusha is featured in it as well. An important aspect of it was that it showed a high literary quality for the period and at an important time. It helped when nationalists were looking for such things, and it played a huge role in their efforts, becoming a source of inspiration for many Czech artists. Everyone knows Smetana's opera Libusha, for example, which was inspired by the Green Mountain manuscript.
Je inspirovaná právě Zelenohorským rukopisem.
Written on pieces of 9th century parchment, the manuscript would be the oldest testament of Czech writing, that is, if it were real. Popular consensus, however, is that it is not. The 19th century Slavic philologist and nationalist Václav Hanka, it seems, had the skill and the motive to make the manuscript. If he did, though, he did it so well that the debate is still raging today.
Já osobně a kolegové z rukopisné společnosti pokládáme.
I personally consider the manuscript to be authentic, as do my colleagues. We base that opinion on chemical and other analyses that have been backed up by modern studies made by criminologists and philologists. Those who contest the manuscript's authenticity largely base their criticism on the original 19th century arguments against it. But there's one thing that people on both sides of the debate agree on, that the manuscript's impact on the national revival was enormous. There's no question about that.
If Hanka did forge the manuscripts, he certainly chose the right place to ascribe its finding to. It's entirely fitting that such a remarkable document would be discovered at Green Mountain, with all its wondrous legend and fantasy. A good time to enjoy that special atmosphere is right now, while the chateau is being gradually renovated, and its ancient nooks and crannies are open to wandering about and wondering at history. That edition of Spotlight from Nepomuk was first broadcast on the 9th day of the 9th month of 2009. If you'd like to hear it again, you can find it on that date on our archives. If you're just tuning in or lost on the airwaves, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Now, as always of a Saturday, it's time for a trip down memory lane and around the halls of the Czech radio archives. Here's David Vaughan.
Voláme všechny Čechy, přijďte nám i hned na pomoc. Voláme všechny Čechy.
Calling all Czechs, come to our aid, calling all Czechs. It is May the 5th, 1945, and with these words Prague Radio appealed to Czechs to join the uprising against the German occupation. This was to be one of the last European battles of World War II, and the greatest moment in the history of Czechoslovak radio. For some time, radio staff had been working secretly with the Czech underground to prepare the ground for the uprising. Their radio appeal marked the beginning of the battle. In the confusion of the following 3 days, with street battles going on around the city, radio was to play an important role, and the radio building also became the focus of much of the fighting. On some recordings that survive, you can still clearly hear gunfire in the background. Czech hands are defending the building of the radio, the reporter announced. We are with you. Remain with us. Prague is and will remain free. Thousands answered the appeal, among them a young Scottish prisoner of war, William Gregg, who had escaped and decided to help defend the radio.
At present, we are broadcasting from the broadcasting station, and outside there is a battle raging.
In the meantime, the German side was also using radio. They still had control of the transmitters in Liblice and Mělník, north of Prague.
Pražané, dosud můžete volit mezi bojem.
Citizens of Prague, the Germans appealed in Czech. It is not too late to choose between violence, destruction and unnecessary bloodshed, and calm, order and well-being. until stable conditions can be re-established. But here in the center of Prague, the radio was by now firmly under Czech control, and on the 415-meter frequency, it responded to the German appeal in no uncertain terms. Through the Mielnik and Liblice transmitters, and by distributing leaflets, the Germans are spreading lies. At the last minute, they are trying to intimidate the brave defenders of Prague. Do not let yourself be deceived by these treacherous German reports. Stay firmly at your posts until the final victory. The radio even gave instructions to the people on the barricades. Once again, we appeal to the people of Prague and its surroundings to continue building barricades and obstacles to block all the roads leading into Prague. The battle continued, and in next week's program, we'll be hearing more archive recordings from the dramatic days of the Prague uprising.
That was David Vaughan with From the Archives, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. If you'd like to listen again or recommend the program to others, we are always on the internet for you. Simply turn to our website at radio.cz. We are always happy to discuss your questions and comments. You can write to us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course with a good old-fashioned letter to Vinohradska 12-12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening and naskladanam.
Thank you. vous écoutez Radio.